Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week and anytime at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is August 15th, 2018. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 25,162, the NASDAQ at 77.74, and the S&P at 2,818. Our topic tonight is Life Cycle of Education Planning. We are live. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio this evening, and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And again, tonight we are talking about the Life Cycle of Education Planning. My guest this evening is David Givler of Valley National Financial Advisors. Dave is currently an associate financial advisor where he's a registered representative with Valley National Investments and an investment advisor representative with Valley National Advisors. Dave focuses on client relationship management, financial planning, and tax preparation and planning. He works with people in varying stages of their life, from recent college graduates seeking advice on student loans to individuals working on their plans for life in retirement. Prior to joining Valley National, David graduated magna cum laude from Moravian College, where he received a Bachelor of Arts in Economics. While at Moravian, David played football and was a Lehigh Valley National Football Foundation College Scholar Athlete. Good job, Dave.
Thanks.
Welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Anything else you want to add to that little intro before we get started?
I don't think so, Lori. I think you kind of hit everything on the head. That was a pretty nice opening for me right there.
Okay, we're going to get down to business. Yeah. We are discussing the life cycle of education planning tonight, and Dave is going to be breaking this down into stages, which include savings, the saving stage, the paying stage, and the repaying stage. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Dave, can you kind of set the stage for us before we kind of begin talking about the life cycle of education planning?
Yeah, sure, Lori. Not a problem at all. So, you know, before we start saving, we have to know what we're saving for. But sometimes when we're talking about the distant future, we don't necessarily know what that might look like. So we have to make some educated guesses and assumptions. For example, are you going to community college, in-state public university, private college? All of those universities have varying costs. For our purposes tonight, we're going to focus on starting somewhere. We're also going to concentrate on using education benefits where we can. So we know that some people pay out of cash flow or out of their investments, but we kind of want to talk about maximizing the education saving strategies that are available. Because, you know, why not? If they're out there, you know, you want to be able to use them. And they're there for your benefit. So
hence why we want to talk about planning, because it isn't just about paying for these things out of cash flow, which we know that some people do.
Yeah.
But if there are ways to save even more through some of these saving strategies we're going to talk about through the show, why not?
Why not give it a shot?
Yeah. Okay. What kind of drew you to this? Because you're kind of fairly new in your career. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been several years. You're doing awesome, by the way. but you really are interested in this. How did that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of like you said, through my career so far, I've had a lot of situations that come up, you know, and there's a lot of different, as we're going to go through the life cycle of this education planning, you know, people have approached me with different questions, you know, in the saving stage, what should we be doing, you know, to kind of accumulate this wealth, put aside this money for education. People have come to me saying, hey, I have student loans, you know, what should we be doing? So I think kind of just my different interactions with these different people in different situations has led me to kind of, you know, wow, there's a lot to this. And, you know, and I'm sure we probably won't hit everything in the 1 hour today. But hopefully we can kind of get through some of these situations that I've seen multiple times, questions that have been asked multiple times, and we can kind of, you know, address some of the big topics. So.
And if you can, and I don't know if you can, but any of your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, I had, you know, after graduating Meridian College, you know, go Greyhounds. But I had some student loans myself, so I had to kind of look into it myself and research. Okay, you know, see what options are available. What should I be doing to paying these down? And that was kind of my first starting point. Obviously, when I was in school, you know, I had to go through some of the FAFSA and things like that, which we'll talk about a little bit. But there's definitely a lot out there. So that's kind of where I started, and you know, now it's progressed to where, you know, you're looking at tax returns, you're looking at, you know, 529 plans, all these things that we're going to talk about today. So there's great.
So it's really interesting, and this is where I was kind of going with asking that question, because you kind of honed in on this mm-hmm. as an area of interest for you mm-hmm. and really piqued your curiosity, and you were hunting some of these avenues down for people.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, you were on the other side of it, and yep. all of a sudden you come into the financial world and you realize, hey, there are all these other options.
Yeah.
Maybe had I known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or
you just get questions off the cuff, right? Because you start talking to people and they're like, oh, what do you do? And you say, I'm a financial advisor. And the most, you know, very common thing, people have student loans, right? You know, there's people who are 24 years old who have student loans, and there's people who are 34 years old.
There are people who are 44
exactly.
who have student loans.
Yeah, exactly.
So real quick, before we start talking about mm-hmm. all the different stages, which we'll probably get into when we come back from our first break, let's start with student loans for a minute, because
sure.
student loans are that last kind of piece that people will use to help pay for college mm-hmm. if they don't have any other resources. I have done shows on education before where I have shared statistics. I don't have them here today. Statistics that say the college education is worth it.
Yeah.
Student loans are worth it mm-hmm. in order to have all the benefits from that education. But if someone had kind of done some of the planning up front, they yeah. may not be as indebted through these student loans. What kind of rates are we talking about these
yeah.
days? What kind of student loan rates are we looking at?
Yeah, so if you're looking at borrowing kind of through the federal government programs that they have out there, which are usually typically the more favorable rates that you're going to get than like a private institution or something like that, you're looking at anywhere, you know, between, for an undergraduate, it's around 5%. Annual interest rate, you know, graduate or professional school, 6.5%. And then, you know, if you're looking at some parent plus, direct plus loans, those are starting at 7.5%. I mean, those are pretty high interest rates that you're going to have to deal with. So, I mean, like you said, statistics show it's worth it. But, you know, hopefully some of this planning, maybe you won't, you know, maybe it can prevent you from having to, you know,
take on as much.
Maybe. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Folks, we are talking with Dave Givler from Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about the life cycle of education planning. The phone number tonight, if you have questions, we can take questions live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with, by dialing 610-758-8810. And when you call in, you could just say, yes, I have a live question. Lori C. is answering the calls tonight. You can give your question to her. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, she'll jot it down and bring it into the studio to us, and we will do our best to answer them. So, Dave, we have about a minute before our first break. What are those stages again that you're going to be talking about tonight?
Sure.
In education planning?
Sure. The stages are savings, paying and repaying, And those are kind of like our main, our three. So savings, paying, and repaying. Those are our three main stages that we're looking at.
So saving prior paying yeah. during, and then repaying if it's student loans.
Yes.
Okay, folks. So again, we're talking about the life cycle of education planning. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com, and we'll respond to those when we get back into the office if you do through the website. But otherwise, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have in the studio with me this evening David Givler of Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about the life cycle of education planning. Before the break, we talked about those various stages, the saving stage, paying stage, and repaying stage. We're going to talk about some of the strategies to use in the education planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you could talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just call and give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to us. So Dave, before the break, we talked about the different stages. What are some of the education saving strategies that you mentioned? I guess it might be in the saving stage then.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Let's start from the beginning. So the what I want to talk about today is, and I'm going to talk a lot about this today, but 529 plans, 529 plans. They're college education savings plans that are out there. Any contributions that you make into these investment vehicles, they grow tax deferred. And if they're used for qualified education expenses, the monies that are eventually withdrawn will be tax-free. So obviously, there's some benefits there. If you're lucky enough to be a Pennsylvania resident, you receive a tax deduction for the contributions. There are some limits there. It's up to $15,000 per beneficiary, and you must have at least $15,000 of income to receive the deduction. So similarly, if you only made $7,000 if you only had $7,000 worth of income, you could only you would only receive a $7,000 deduction. You can't receive a deduction more than the
income.
So
you could still do the contribution of $15,000. You'd only get the deduction for $7,000
exactly.
to kind of wipes out the income.
Yes.
And then that would also apply if it's like a husband and wife.
Yeah.
So if a husband wanted to do $15,000 and the wife wanted to do $15,000 and the husband made $30,000 and the wife didn't make any.
Yeah,
it would still be limited to the 15,000.
It would still be limited to the 15. Yep.
All right.
That's good to know. And talking about, you know, who's making the contributions kind of lead me into my next point here. But anyone actually can contribute to the plan and receive the tax deduction themselves. So family, friends, a neighbor. You know, if you set this plan up, for your kid, you have a newborn baby, you want to set up a 529 plan early, you know, maybe as a gift, someone could, you know, contribute to the 529 plan as a neighbor and they could receive a tax deduction.
So that's because it's a Pennsylvania plan. So Pennsylvania is probably one of the best states that have instituted this tax. Well, it's a deduction on your tax return. And it's so liberal with it.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you do have to have the Social Security number and name of the person that you're making the contribution to their 529, but it's kind of great because one, like if the parent wants to control the 529, but the aunts and uncles want to contribute, then it's kind of nice for them. And if they're PA residents, they get that deduction as well. Dave, we had a call come in. Michael from Bethlehem, thank you for calling in. It's off air. He had asked, is a 529 plan the best thing to do for a 6-month-old? And I think you almost just said that.
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, so and this is something I was going to talk about later, but we can talk about now. There are other education saving vehicles out there, but you know, there's a new tax law that came through this year where actually 529 plans, you can actually, it's great for a 6-month-old because, you know, Michael, I'm not sure if your 6-month-old is going to go to a private or type of school in elementary or high school. But you can actually use up to $10,000 per year from the 529 plan to pay for that education expense as well. That's new. Used to be in 2017, couldn't do that, but now you can. So I think that it would be for a 6-month-old, it's a great option. Start saving now, put a little bit away every month. You can allow that to have some investment gains in it as well, because you're investing that 529, that 529 money. And I would
you know,
agree.
That's a good idea, because I have had where a client was very committed to their child going to mm-hmm. private school for yep. elementary and high school, yep. very committed. And then there was a job change. Mm. And this was, before the tax law changed that said we can use 529 money for mm-hmm. tuition for private school for elementary and secondary. And had that been available to them at that time, it could have taken a little of the pressure off of them, because now they were scrambling. They had all this money in their 529 accounts for college, but they also had wanted to fund the private secondary education. Then one of the spouses lost their job. They were a little worried. We actually had done the planning for them. They did have it saved up. But that could have taken some of the pressure off now that they can use up to $10,000 of the 529. So, Michael, is a 529 plan the best thing to do for a 6-month-old? Well, as long as you have other cash flow and you're not putting money on your credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
One thing Dave and I have learned, it is part of the planning. You want to make sure that you have the cash flow and other mm-hmm. resources you need for your own retirement and things like that. But if you are have funds available to fund education, a 529 plan is great. Because the other thing that happens, Dave mentioned all the gains, it's the power of compounding.
Yep.
So
you're not paying any taxes on that compounding growth that's going on. And, you know, again, just one more thing for Michael, you know, it goes back to when I kind of introed and started talking earlier, was think about what your end goal is, right? How much do you want to have saved up? There's a lot of great resources online. You know, if you could type in 529, projections for how much you need to save up, where you can let that, you can see, you know, based on some compounding interest that Lori's talking about, it'll ask you for what your assumed interest growth rate is in the account, and how much you need to contribute each month to get a good starting base. And when you start with a 6-month-old, you know, you have a much longer time horizon, right? If you're talking about, you have a 14-year-old who's going to college in 4 years, and you want to fund it through the 529, well, you're not going to have near as much growth through that time period of the 529. So it makes a big difference.
So those assumptions go back to, you said put in the calculator how much you need mm-hmm. to save and over that time period mm-hmm. and what interest rate, but also whether you're going to fund a public education, community college, or the private school.
Yeah.
So those are some assumptions. But with a 6-month-old, not knowing where that child's going to go, saving anything.
Exactly. It's a good start.
It's a good start.
Yeah.
Right.
And okay. And there is some good news, too, because, you know, if anyone else is a listener, again, thanks, Mike, for the question. But if anyone else is maybe sitting there saying, well, I don't know if my kid's going to go to college, right? Or maybe they're going to get a scholarship. Maybe something else is going to happen. Well, the good news is that these 529 plans can actually get passed down to future generations of descendants. So it's not like you're locked into the beneficiary is, you're not locked into that.
So if Jimmy turns out he's going to be an artist and
go
travel the world.
Or if he turns out he's going, you know, full scholarship somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you can change the beneficiary without any tax consequences. So it's not like you're paying taxes.
To Susie.
You can change it to up to Susie. And one quick thing on the tax consequences too, which we maybe didn't say, is if you were to use that money for something outside of, you know, secondary, elementary, or college education, then you're going to get hit with some income taxes on that deferred growth that's there, and you're also going to get hit with a 10% penalty as well. So that's just something to keep in mind before you just start throwing money in that 529 and think it's great. There is some limitations. You have to make sure you're paying for these using these qualified education expenses.
And we're going to talk about that probably in our next segment about the qualified education expenses. So, Michael, thank you for that call. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. When you call in, she'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and we'll do the best we can to answer that. We're talking with David Givler of Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about the life cycle of education planning. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me this evening a guest, David Givler of Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about the life cycle of education planning. If you have questions, we're here live. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just call in and give us the question, and we'll write it down and bring it into the studio, 610-758-8810. I just want to circle back to a couple items that we were talking about, Dave, from the tax standpoint with the 529s. First of all, again, love the PA deduction. That's huge. You had mentioned it's limited to the $15,000 and or income of at least that much per person. So I could give $15,000. My husband could give $15,000. We could each give that much to 10 of our children, as long as we have that much income each. So that's great. I also want to mention, so that's a nice tax deduction right there. You're saving 3.07%. So even if you put it in cash, you saved 3.07%. Then you get that growing. It's compounding when you eventually take the money out, which we're going to talk about. As long as it was for qualified education expenses, there's no income tax on that growth. If a child doesn't go to college, you can change the beneficiary on that to some other related party, either brother, sister, cousins, even parents. So it can grandchild, descendants. So that's good to know. Another item I wanted to just touch on was if you have, for example, an only child and there are no other descendants at this point, and that child gets a full ride, then there is an exception to the 10% penalty. So remember, if the funds are used for qualified education expenses, there's no tax on any of it. If it's not used for qualified education expenses and we actually have to take the money out because we didn't need it, well, yeah, we would pay income tax on it just like we would have in any other investment account. So that's no different. You're still ahead. You got the deferral for all those years. But you would still have the income tax, but there's a 10% penalty if you use it for something other than education. But there are exceptions. So I did want to mention that again. And Dave, I don't know if you end up talking about the exceptions, but one of them is scholarships. Another is if the child, I believe, goes into the military, death. So there are some exceptions to that 10% penalty. There is some flexibility here. So again, the phone number 610-758-8810. Dave, let's talk about now the qualified education expenses. Can we dive into that a little bit so people understand what that means?
Yeah. So qualified education expenses, you're looking at tuition, fees, books, room and board. You're also looking at any computer technology, so a laptop, things like that people might not know. So again, I just want to reiterate, it's not just tuition. We're talking about books, which – you know, I know are expensive. Anyone who's had to buy books, they're expensive. Laptop, room and board, and eligible education institution. And you can even get a little more complicated, but you can even, you know, if there's internet access costs at the university, things like that, that's all is considered qualified education expenses. And for the secondary and elementary school, again, it's capped at, it's a maximum of $10,000.
And that's tuition?
Tuition. Yes, tuition.
Okay. And so those are qualified education expenses for the 529s.
Yep. So if you make a distribution from the 529, you pay for the tuition, pay for anything like that, you're not going to get hit with that 10% penalty or the income tax there. So that's great.
Now, I also want to mention, when we talk about all those qualified education expenses,
mm-hmm.
there is a different definition for qualified education expenses for any number of education benefits. So
yes.
People, you have to be very
yes.
careful. Dave's going to talk about, I believe, the American Opportunity Credit
yep.
maybe in a little
yep.
while, because that is different
mm-hmm.
education
mm-hmm.
expenses. So back to paying. So we have this 529. It's
yep.
grown. We're taking it out for qualified education expenses. You mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show that anybody could put money into the 529.
Yep.
So I could have a 529 for my child, but my sister might have a 529 for her child, and
yep.
I could put money in it. So different people can own them.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with that? What if
yeah.
it's owned by other people?
So an interesting scenario I'm gonna run by you is if it's owned if you have 529 plans that are owned by parents and grandparents. This is a common situation that I have come across.
More common than the aunt and uncle.
More common than aunt and uncle,
yeah.
but grandparents, right?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Grandparents want to, you know, give back and things like that. So this is a very interesting situation that you have to kind of factor in. We talked about FAFSA, which is the free application for federal student aid. So that's what you fill out every year to see kind of what aid you're eligible for. So what happens is the FAFSA form has some calculations on there. So it factors in parents' total assets, income by the child, and other things like that. All factor
income
in
income by the parents.
Income by the parents. Mm-hmm. All of that factors into the benefit that you're going to receive from the federal government.
The expected family contribution calculation
yes.
comes from that, and then they figure out the aid from that.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting part is that grandparent 529 plans don't come into the FAFSA at all. The only time they do is if the grandparents are making distributions from the 529 plan to pay for the education. And when that comes through on the FAFSA form, it actually comes through as income for the student. And that's going to hurt the amount of federal aid that you can potentially receive. So one of the strategies that I've discussed, if you know parents and grandparents have pretty equal amounts in the 529 plans, is that you want the parents to actually be the ones who front load, who pay for the first 2 years, so you know freshman, sophomore year of college, and then the grandparents fund the later years, because FAFSA only looks back the prior 2 years, so you're avoiding that coming up on FAFSA. The grandparents now, because they're paying junior year, you know, it was never factored into FAFSA in the first place, and because you wait until junior year, it's not actually going to be factored in as income for the student either. So it's a great way to kind of work your way around that.
Well, and sometimes I think people worry a lot about the FAFSA and how it's mm-hmm. going to impact financial aid, but people also have to understand sometimes they don't qualify for financial aid anyway.
Yes, exactly.
And it's still okay if the grandparents have the 529
yeah.
accounts. And in those cases, it probably wouldn't matter when they're taking it out.
No, but if you're looking at someone who might be eligible for even, you know, you don't have to have a scholarship, or you don't have to have a grant from federal, but you could maybe get, you know, work study, other things like that, that, you know, as you're going through, you know, it's worth taking
a
look at.
That's a good point.
It's worth taking a look at because it might disqualify you for some other federal benefit that's out there.
Right, because a lot of times people think the FAFSA is for free money,
yes.
like the grants and all the free money, and it's
yeah.
not just the free money.
Yeah.
It's subsidized loans
yep.
sometimes, and that's a big
yeah.
benefit. I
yep.
don't know if we're going to talk about that, but subsidized loans,
mm-hmm.
and then the work study, as you mentioned, and
yep.
that's actually a great opportunity. You and I talked earlier about how we both did work
we
study
did,
in
yeah.
college, and we learned a lot from
yeah.
it, so it's always good experience as well to be able to have that available. So the FAFSA for financial aid does not factor in the grandparents' 529s, but in the year that a grandparent makes a distribution from the 529 for the benefit of that child going to school, it comes into the calculation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I get nervous when sometimes when people say it's income to the child, because I like to differentiate, because it's not like taxable income to the child.
No, yeah.
It's considered a resource of the child. And the FAFSA, I think, treats it kind of like income, but it's not taxable income.
No,
so
it's not. It's not taxable.
I don't want anybody ever to think it's taxable. It's not taxable to the child, but it's considered a resource. And when it's considered a resource of the child, there's a bigger contribution element associated with that, I believe, than if it was the parents' resources.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the caution there. And this is why it's important when we're talking about planning. As we mentioned, Dave, at the beginning of the show, that with a little planning, you can kind of maximize your benefits, because if you don't know about this stuff,
if you don't know, if you don't come across a situation, like I said, I've seen plenty of situations where like the grandparent 529 didn't make a difference because it wasn't going to impact FAFSA at all. But I've seen others where it made a big difference about, like you said, it's not just free money that the government's going to give you. It's about federal, it's about work study, it's about, you know, the type of loans that you're going to be eligible for and things like that. So.
Yeah. Okay, folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. We still have one accident on 22 East blocking both directions at Fullerton Avenue. Your current temperature is 87. On Thursday, you have a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m. High near 89 Thursday night. Low around 71. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high near 86. And Friday night, low around 71 again. Saturday, leading into your weekend, it's going to be showers, thunderstorms, and partly sunny with a high near 82. And for your Saturday night, low around 65 degrees. And for Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 62. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, listeners. I'm with Dave Givler this evening from Valley National Financial Advisors, and we are talking about the life cycle of education planning and how important planning is. For regular listeners, at the end of every show, I say be proactive, not reactive. And this is a great example of that. The sooner you start planning for this, the more opportunities you actually have to help fund education. And as we all know, the cost of education rises exponentially faster and higher than regular inflation. So the sooner we start planning for it, the better. And education makes such a difference in a person's ability to obtain a job and retain a job. Statistics show high school graduates have higher unemployment when we're in those periods of unemployment. So it just makes a difference, and it even makes a difference in such a way that it's worth taking out student loans if that's what you have to do. But if you do a little planning, we can help you hopefully minimize the amount that you would have to do. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, Lori will write the question down and bring it in to us. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. And we did have a call come in from Zen in Ocean City, New Jersey. That's awesome. We love our New Jersey listeners. And the question was, grandparents with 529s for six children. Oh, you're so nice. They're Pennsylvania 529s. Does having a Pennsylvania 529 mean you can only go to a Pennsylvania school? Dave?
No, you know, that's a great question, and it's something I've been asked before, not for Pennsylvania specifically, but for other states. So the way 529 plans are, there's different state-owned 529 plans, and you're actually, you know, some states have different benefits if you use their state 529 plan, they might give you a little bit more incentive. Pennsylvania isn't like that. Pennsylvania, again, any 529 plan you contribute to, you get the tax deduction. But as far as the state, that doesn't impact the school. So if you have a PA 529 plan, it does not mean that you have to go to school in Pennsylvania. Just the same as if you're in Pennsylvania and you have a Virginia 529 plan. You can go to school in Pennsylvania, Ohio, any university, and eligible university, I should say, and you can still receive the benefits.
What's interesting, Zen, I think that some of this stems from when 529s first came out, and I think Michigan might have been one of the first states, go Michigan, might have been one of the first states to have a 529 plan, and there was the guaranteed element of it. So that's how I believe these started, and 529 comes from the Internal Revenue Code section 529 that governs these plans, and the guaranteed piece was you buy kind of tuition credits that were kind of fixed and you were buying into that. But they evolved into becoming an investment that you could do whereby the investor takes more of the risk. Prior, the state was always taking the risk, and both typically exist today. So people can still buy these guaranteed tuition credits. For a while, I know there was a lot more talk about people doing a little bit of both, where they would buy the guaranteed piece and do some of their own investments. But so I think that's where people originally thought you could only use it for that state, because there were more restrictions when they first came out. But now it's pretty
open. And and again, it's like all of this education planning isn't stuff that's just intrinsic knowledge, right? So it's things that you learn through experience. And, you know, you see PA 529. What's the first thing you think? Oh, it's a Pennsylvania. It's got something's got to do with Pennsylvania. It's got to just be Pennsylvania. But no, it's open. So that's a great question, though, Zen. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And Zen, if you're a New Jersey resident, then you're not getting the benefit of the deduction for the 529. So then my planning hat goes on and says, but are the six children Pennsylvania residents? Maybe they should make a gift to the parents and let the parents make a deduction. Two children, sorry. Lori abbreviated the question. It was not six children. It was grandchildren. It's abbreviate.
All right.
Okay. So thank you for calling in. Yeah, we appreciate it. But the other thing to point out is every person's situation is different, too. Yeah. So you can't always just listen to a radio show and take all that knowledge from it. You have to understand circumstances that apply to you. Dave, let's talk about the some of the tax strategies and implications of paying for college.
Great.
Tuition.
Yeah. So tax strategies. There's some great credits out there. When you're paying for tuition, I'll talk a little bit more about when we're in the repaying stage. I'll talk about some of those tax benefits. But in the paying stage, you have the one credit. It's called the American Opportunities Credit. I'm going to give you a couple limitations out the gate before you get too excited with it. Your modified adjusted gross income, which is your total income that you have on your tax return, is between $160,000 and $180,000. This credit phases out. And what I mean by phases out is that you're not going to be eligible for it. So anything over $180,000.
Married filing joint,
you're not going to be eligible for it. And it's only eligible for the first 4 years of school. So unfortunately, not grad students, but first 4 years of school. And now what this credit does, so let's get to the benefit here. The credit is refundable the credit counts for 100% of the first $2,000 in tuition paid, and then 25% goes towards the next $2,000 for a maximum of a $2,500 credit. And of that $2,500 credit, $1,000 is actually refundable.
So if you had $2,500 in income tax and you had the American Opportunity Credit of $2,500, wipes out the tax completely.
Yep.
If I had $1,000 of income tax, it would wipe out $1,000 of my income tax, but I would have been eligible for $2,500, but I only had $1,000 of tax. It's going to wipe out the $1,000, but then you're telling me there's another $1,000 that would still be refundable.
$1,000 refund, which is the big word, the big tax word, credit versus refund, right?
Yeah,
and Lori, you know taxes.
Yes, we love tax credits. I love the American Opportunity Credit. But you also told me I got these other benefits from the 529 account. So do I get both the benefit of the 529 account and the American Opportunity Credit?
So this is a very interesting situation that comes up quite often. I'm sure, Laura, you've seen it before too. So if you're eligible for this American Opportunities Credit, and you know, you have to look and see, you know, how many years of school is it the first year, second year, third year, fourth year, and what's your modified adjusted, what's your income going to be, right? So if you're in that income area, you know, a great strategy here is to you know, leave. So you have let's just give a situation. So you have a lot in their 529 plan, which can be transferred to descendants, right? So it's not going to go to waste. So you have a lot in your 529 plan, but you qualify for this credit. You know, a lot of times we end up, you know, recommending or looking at the strategy where you pay $4,000 now, quote unquote, out of pocket, right? So you're not paying that $4,000 from the 529 plan, you're paying that from some other income source, from your investment accounts, from your bank account, something like that. And so you pay $4,000, but you get a $2,500 credit. So essentially you're paying $4,000. You're essentially paying $1,500 for $4,000 worth of school.
Right.
It's a pretty big savings, right?
Well, because if you don't have all the money you need in the 529 anyway.
Yeah.
And you have this credit available for 4 years.
Yes.
And you know you're not going to have all the money in the 529 anyway. You're saying do a little less out of the 529.
Yes.
All but $4,000 of tuition for those other qualified education expenses, which are pretty broad for the 529. But the American Opportunity Credit is just based on tuition.
Tuition alone, yeah.
So you pay the 529, from the 529, you're paying for the computer stuff you
room
were mentioning,
board,
the
yeah.
room and board, maybe some of the tuition, but you want at least $4,000 out of pocket for the tuition to get that $2,500 credit. You do that each year, and it reduces overall the amount you need then. For the college,
you're getting
savings.
A $2,500 credit on the fourth.
Yeah, free money.
Again.
It's free money.
Yeah, it's free. It's $1,500. You're paying $1,500 for $4,000 worth of school, which is great.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
if
great.
You got that type of discount walking into the department store, I think you'd be pretty happy. So.
Yeah, so it takes a little effort to kind of make sure you're coordinating that, and making sure that you're eligible for that benefit, and
you
have to plan ahead to make sure you're doing it. You said it was available for the first 4 years of education. That's undergraduate work. What other strategies are out there for us?
So there's another one out there. It's called the Lifetime Learning Credit. So this one, again, has some limitations, a little bit lower for the adjusted gross income. Those threshold, again, married filing joint, you're looking at $112,000 to $132,000 as a maximum. Anything over $132,000, you wouldn't be eligible for it. But you can get a credit up to $2,000 per return. It's 20% up to $10,000 of expenses for tuition, fees, books, supplies, equipment. It's available for undergrads, grads. It's something to look at maybe after you've, you know, again, if you've been eligible for the American Opportunities Credit, and maybe you're also eligible for the Lifetime Learning Credit, and you're looking at grad school, things like that, that's where you can get that benefit.
So if you took 6 years like I did, because I worked, folks, I worked my entire college career. It took me a little longer.
Yeah.
So if you... So I took 6 years. So the first 4 years, I would have been able to use the American Opportunity Credit if it had been available at the time.
Yep.
And then the last 2 years, I could use the lifetime
learning credit
as long as my income is below those thresholds.
Yeah.
But the lifetime learning credit thresholds are a little lower.
They are a little lower.
So
and you know, something else to point out too is, you know, maybe, you know, Lori, if you're taking, maybe you want to go back and take some classes, you know, and, you know, if you're eligible, if you're, again, in the threshold, under the threshold, you could take it. It doesn't have to be undergrad, graduate. You can just start, if you just take some classes at a
lifetime
university.
Lifetime learning. That's
lifetime learning.
Where it comes
that's
from.
It
just hit me.
Yeah.
Lifetime learning. So to encourage people to continue with their lifetime learning. So those are some great tax credits. And if people understand the impact of a tax credit, that's the best kind of tax benefit that you want. So what if I don't have enough saved up to pay for college expenses and I do need to take out a loan?
Yeah, so there's some student loan options that are out there that, you know, so first there's subsidized loans. So for those loans, interest won't accrue while you're in school.
So that's kind of subsidized by the government.
Yes.
That's where that word subsidized comes from? Okay.
And then you have unsubsidized loans. Again, still a good option, but the interest does accrue while you're in school. Sometimes you're eligible to pay that while you're still in school. You can maybe pay the interest so you don't have the compounding effect hurting you there. But you can do that.
So that still could be a government loan, but because you didn't qualify under the FAFSA form, yep. mm-hmm. it might not be subsidized.
Mm-hmm.
So the interest would accrue, but people can pay the interest during their educational years.
Exactly.
And then when they come out of school, it would be then just that original amount that they took out as mm-hmm. a loan.
Yeah. And then there's a third one that I'll talk about is the Direct Plus loan, sometimes called Parent Plus loan, because you can have a joint signer with your parent on that. And not all schools participate in that, and that's got the highest interest will accrue. That's got the highest interest rate out of the three. Not all schools participate, but it still carries the same tax deductible benefits that the other two, the subsidized and unsubsidized, have.
And I think the loans typically, Dave, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my recollection was some of these student loans are available even if you wouldn't otherwise qualify for financial aid.
Yes, yes.
So, but I think you have to fill out the FAFSA form.
You still have to fill out the FAFSA
to get it.
Yeah, to get it. That's an important part there. That's why that FAFSA form, even though it can be a pain, it's not the easiest form in the world to fill out, but it's good to know kind of where you stand. And if you're not eligible for those loans, you know, there's always private loans are still an option. You know, Sallie Mae, Citizens Bank, SoFi, there's a lot of options out there. The one word of caution I want to say, though, is when you're looking at these loans is, you know, you can have a variable interest rate loan or a fixed interest rate loan. So a variable interest rate loan, that's going to go up and down kind of as interest rates move. The fixed is going to be fixed throughout the lifetime of the loan. So typically when you look at these loan options, you're going to see a variable interest rate that's going to be lower than the fixed. So that might be appealing to you at first, saying, oh, wow, look, this is going to be less interest. This is going to be better. The problem is that we've been in an a rising interest rate environment. The kind of the assumption and the anticipation is that it's going to continue to rise. So having a variable interest rate loan might look appealing now, but 6 months, a year from now, that interest rate might be higher than what that fixed would have been. And then when you say, okay, well, maybe I'll go look back at that fixed. Well, hold on a second. That fixed has now gone up with the rates as well. So the benefit of locking in that fixed earlier or now is that you know what you're going to get. That fixed might 6 months from now, that fixed rate, if it was 5%, might not be 5% anymore. That fixed rate might be 6.5, you know, 7. So it's good to be aware of kind of where interest rates are going or have been going. So it's good to keep that in mind when you're looking at these loans.
Good words of caution. Folks, we are coming up on our last break. If you have questions, there's still plenty of time. The number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Hi, welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking with Dave Givler from Valley National Financial Advisors, and we are talking about the life cycle of education planning. We're in our last part of the show. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We've loved the questions tonight. I really appreciate it. I love Your Financial Choice listeners. They're very informed. We had Matt from Easton call in, and he asked, is there a downside to having a 529 when looking at financial aid? And Dave, I know you talked earlier about if a grandparent had a 529 and made a distribution for financial aid. What about a parent having a 529? Might that impact their financial aid?
Yeah, so a parent owning a 529 would impact the financial aid. Again, the FAFSA form, when you go, there's a lot of resources out there to kind of help guide you through that. But on that form, it's going to ask those type of questions. You know, what are your assets? What are things? And they ask about, you know, the college education savings.
So it could come up as a resource available.
Yes.
But it's not as much of when the FAFSA is calculating the expected family contribution and they're looking at the parents' assets and income. Mm-hmm. There's certain assets they don't count at all, like retirement accounts,
correct, yeah.
Roth IRAs. Fund those retirement accounts.
Yeah.
But it will look at the 529 as an available resource.
Exactly.
But it doesn't say it's like 100% available.
No, and it's not going to be like, oh, I have a 529 plan. There's no way I'm going to get, you know, any aid.
Right.
It's a calculation.
There's a formula for that. So it's still a great way to save.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite often, Matt, what I tell folks when they're worried about financial aid and how their resources are going to impact it, you don't have to make a lot these days or own a lot these days to not get financial aid the way that people think of when 50 years ago when you were trying to get financial aid, which was free grant money, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. That just isn't available at the same level it used to be. So quite often when we're looking at financial aid, it is, as Dave mentioned earlier, it could be the subsidized loans, unsubsidized loans, work, study, that type of thing. So I think it's good to still save and not count on any free money.
Yeah, and when we're talking about these different aid options that are out there, you know, there are tons of scholarships, state, local grants. I didn't get to talk about this and when we're talking about the paying stage, kind of to wrap up on the paying stage here. But there are tons of these scholarships that are out there. You know, if you do some research, you go online, you'll see that there is options available where, you know, maybe you have to write an essay, you have to do something, talk about an experience. It might only be $500 or $1,000, but everything, you know, in my mind counts.
As, of course.
As anything, like I said, that's why not, right? Our big theme today is why not? So, you know, if you go online, do some research, there is some other aid options that fall outside of the FAFSA realm. So.
Yeah, sometimes there's academic scholarships. You just have to sometimes still file for the FAFSA for the school to apply the academic mm-hmm. scholarships. My daughter was an athlete and got a full ride. I love talking about that. Let's talk about the loan repayment stage.
Okay, great.
So now we've had the loans. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of them were subsidized, some were unsubsidized. Oh my gosh, now I have to pay for them.
Yeah. So I'm going to first talk about a pretty cool program that's out there, and then I'll talk more about the details for, you know, some of the tax implications there. So there's something out there, and I've gotten this, I'm talking about this because I've gotten this question multiple times, is there's a public student loan forgiveness program. So this is for anyone who is employed full-time through a qualified employer. Now, a qualified employer is a government organization at any level, so federal, state, local, or a not-for-profit organization that is tax-exempt under Section 501(c)(3) of the IRS code. So again, that's important to understand who qualifies for this. Now, if you make 120 qualified payments, now, a qualified payment is the monthly payment, the standard monthly payment, so 10 years. So again, this is a long time period here. We're talking about 10 years worth of payments. There are very specific steps that go along with this. You have to file very, you know, rigorous paperwork every year for this. But if you do that for 10 years, your student loans after that 10-year period, anything that's remaining is forgiven.
So you have to get into the program, though. You can't just say, oh, I've been paying off my student loan for 10 years and then say, oh, I've done it and now it's forgiven. You actually have to apply for the program.
Yes, you have to apply for the program.
To start that 10-year
period. Yes, and you have to file paperwork every year showing that you're at an eligible employer, you're employed full-time. And again, it's 10 years. So, you know, there's a tricky situation here because, and again, any clients who have come and asked me this question, I've always cautioned that, you know, where do you see yourself in 10 years? If you're at, you know, a not-profit right now, you think you love your job, well, 4 or 5 years from now, you know, things change in your life, things happen, maybe you're not going to be there anymore. So now you've kind of been on this flat level paying, you're not working to pay down the loan as much because you've been thinking the whole time you're going to have it forgiven in the end, right? So let's pay as little as we can. You're not worrying about the interest accruing, everything like that, because it's going to be forgiven. Well, now if you change employers, well, that student loan is now, that's your burden. It's not, they don't come in and say, oh, well, you did 4 years, congrats. No, it's, you got to do the full 10 years in order, you know, to be eligible for this. But it is a good program. If you know where you're going to be and you see yourself in those organizations and you're very confident and comfortable. But I will caution that, you know, you really want to call the public student loan forgiveness agency and get full detail to make sure that you're, you know, taking advantage in the best way that you can in the program, and also that, you know, you're eligible and doing the right steps year in and year out.
So we talked real quickly, because I know there's some other things you want to get to, about certain professions that may lend themselves to this. Postal workers, someone working at a nonprofit hospital, and they love the hospital, they love the location, and they think they're going to be there forever. This is like an alert for them.
It's definitely an alert. And it's like, hey, you know, if you
check it out.
If you have, you know, like hospital is a perfect example, right? If you have a lot of loans, maybe medical, whatever, you've gone to many years of school and you have to now pay this back and you're staring at this and it's a lot. You know, this is one option that maybe could save you a lot in student loan payments. So, but again, 10 years, long time.
Okay. Some people talk about, well, I have student loans. Do I get a deduction on my tax return for the interest?
Yes. So what happens is you can receive a student loan interest up to $2,500. There's also a phase out. Again, we're talking phase outs today, but there's a phase out between $130,000 and $160,000 for married filing joint. So again, if you have $2,500, if you're below that threshold and you have $2,500 of student loan interest that you paid during the course of that year, you'll receive a $2,500 deduction, which is nice, which is, you know, it kind of helps take away some of the bite of maybe that high interest rate that you're paying,
So it's a deduction, which is very different than the tax credits we were talking about earlier.
It's not refundable. It's not as fun as a refund, but it's still a deduction, which is nice and it's helpful. And, you know, when you're thinking about these student loans and interest rates, you know, a lot of people ask the question of, well, should I refinance? What should I do? You know, I'm a big fan of always, you know, weighing your options and seeing what's out there, trying to do as much planning as you can. But just to be careful when you are refinancing, refinancing, we want to think about fixed interest rates. Don't get, you know, caught in with variable. You want to think about the fixed interest rates. And also you want to make sure that you're consolidating similar loans, right? So some of these loans are eligible for this student loan interest deduction, but not all loans.
So if it's a private loan,
that's not going to cut it. And if you would try and consolidate the private with these the maybe it's like an unsubsidized loan, you try and consolidate with that your private, well, now the whole loan that you've now consolidated to is ineligible for this deduction. So that's something that you really want to be cautious about before you refinance. But I mean, it's always good to kind of take a look at that.
Okay. There are so many things we talked about tonight that we know we can't get into all of the details of everything. It's about awareness, high level awareness. So in talking about what was the first stage? Paying,
saving.
We talked about the 529s. Mm-hmm. And then in the paying stage, we talked about being careful how you're paying for the education, whether you're using the 529s or you're using some out-of-pocket monies to maximize the American Opportunity Credit or the Lifetime Learning Credit. We have to coordinate the benefits that are available. It's a coordination of the benefits. So you want to be careful. But also the benefit of compounding over time with saving with 529s.
Yeah.
People could still save, though, outside of 529 if they're very nervous about it.
You can save outside of the 529, put the money aside, you know, set it there. It's not a bad idea to have that. But again, you know, one of the main points I want to come back to is, I think it was Mike who said 6 month old, right? The more time that you have to let that interest compound in that account and to let it grow, you know, the more potential you have for those gains, which is great. So,
and then just make sure you use, when you're taking a distribution from it, that it's a qualified distribution.
Qualified distribution.
Oh, that's something we should mention too, about making sure that you're matching it in the year of cost.
Yes, very true. So you don't want to, so, you know, tuition, it gets paid, you know, per semester, most universities. So you don't want to say, oh, well, you know, like I said, Johnny's going to school and it's going to cost $40,000 this year. Let's pull $40,000 out of the 529 plan. That's not the way you want to do it. You want to pay where it has to match up to the tuition or room and board or what it books, all of that in the year.
You've paid it. So if in the fall I pay $20,000, what you were saying, then in January I'm going to pay another 20. I don't want to take the 40 out now. I'm going to take the 20 out. So pay it.
Yeah.
Then take the distribution from the 529 or take it directly from the 529 to in that moment. Don't wait around.
Don't do it early.
Yeah, so don't do it after the fact, and don't do it early. And sometimes people have asked, can you use it to pay off the loans?
Yeah.
It's too late if you don't. Yes. You have to match the 529 distributions in the year of the expense.
Yeah, so that's another good point. You can't use the 529 for loans.
Okay, Dave, we're wrapping up here. Thank you so much for coming on. You did
Thanks
a
for
great
having
job.
Me. It's great.
I really appreciate it. If people want to reach you, what's the phone number for them to call?
610-868-9000.
And your website?
ValleyNationalGroup.com.
Okay. Yeah. And we thank you for coming. We're going to have you on again.
I love it. Yeah.
Lots of good information, especially as we're in August and kids are heading back to college and parents are taking their students on college visits and things like that. This is the time to plan. If you haven't already, be ahead of it. It's never too late to do some planning. So, Dave, again, thank you so much for being here. Listeners, thank you for calling in with all your great questions. We really appreciate it. Lori, thanks for taking the call. Shondi, thanks for manning the board tonight. Next week, I'm going to talk about the elements of financial planning, how all of the pieces of your financial life fit together. So the elements of financial planning and how important it is to make sure that you're coordinating those, just like we talked about coordinating your education benefits to maximize the strategies that you're using. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week. Thanks again, Dave. Thanks, Shondi. Thanks, Lori.